What were those teams?
I don't recall.
Okay. Ole Miss at home.
Loss. That's going to be a downer. Downer after the big win in Jordan. As Faxon says, Jordan Hare, which I love that. Jordan Hare Stadium.
We hope that that's a win, but probably not.
Of course we do.
At Missouri.
They're going to split those. Win.
South Carolina.
That's a win.
At Texas.
Loss.
Georgia and Atlanta. Home game for Georgia.
Yeah, more of a home game. Loss. They lose the relative home game for them in Jacksonville. Loss.
Boomer Sooners.
Mateer will be in a body cast by then. Win.
Okay. At Kentucky.
Win.
Vandy.
Win.
At Florida State.
Loss, because we got to be mad about something. They lose at Florida State. It's going to be interim coach season at Florida State. What did I give them?
So you gave them 8 wins.
Okay. Not even trying.
Not even trying.
Not even trying. Eight wins.
They're gonna win at Auburn. They're going to beat South Carolina. And they're going to beat Oklahoma. Not even trying. Not even trying.
Nah.
Not going to slip up anywhere along the way and lose to someone they shouldn't.
Ben, let me ask you a question. Okay, let me ask you a question. Because somebody asked me this. It might have been a text on the text line we didn't get to. Somebody asked this the other day. Would you consider Aaron Filo an upgrade on DJ Lagway? And I paused for a second.
I think I would, actually. I don't know. I would have liked to see John Summerall coach DJ Lagway.
That's what I'm saying. This is not a talent evaluation. This is a system evaluation. I think what DJ Lagway was tasked to do was not great for him. So if you're asking me who would I pick to be my quarterback in my system, whatever I'm choosing, I would take Lagway over Filo. But if you're telling me that Filo in Buster Faulkner's offense greater than DJ Lagway and what he was doing last year, I don't think it's that far-fetched to say yes to that.
Also, I wouldn't be surprised if Lagway does great at Baylor. I really wouldn't. I'm a big fan of him, but I think he had a heart problem, actually, at Florida. And Napier did not figure out how to press the right buttons to fix that.
You know, I was thinking about this. It's interesting you bring that up. We'll get back to Florida in a second. But that brings up an excellent point. Remember last year when Thomas Castellanos was talking openly about, like, they brought me here to save my coach's job? Of all the things that have come out of the NIL era, like the payment and stuff, there's pressure. There is a lot of pressure. Look, they get paid handsomely. Many of these high-profile athletes get paid handsomely, and the cost is you got to live with pressure. Pressure and stakes and expectations. You're treated more like workers in the economy than you are like college kids who are just like trying to find themselves, okay? So that's true. But I think there are things that we can saddle young people with without a – like whoever the quarterback was that Billy Napier brought in at the point that he did was going to be tasked with saving Billy Napier's job. There's no question about it. The only question I have about DJ Lagway is, isn't it kind of the same at Baylor? Like, didn't he transfer to Baylor and the folks at Baylor are looking at him going, all right, we got a coach that we're not quite sure about, and he did enough last year to make us say, huh, maybe we got something here. But Dave Aranda appears to be on a bit of a shaky seat, a bit of a heated seat at Baylor. And I just wonder if DJ Lagway on a team that's 5-7 isn't walking into a very similar situation where it is his responsibility to save his coach's job for a second straight time.
Yeah, for the second straight time, though. He ought to be used to it.
True. But did you talked about his heart problem? See, I wonder if they're connected.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's going to find that out. That's my question. And maybe it's not. Maybe it's as you say that, like, hey, he's a little more free now. There's not the expectations of the money. Like, there's less stigma around it, and maybe you're closer to home there. You're a little more obscure. Like, nobody's, you know, not as many people are living and dying on every play like they were at Florida.
I'm pulling for the guy. I just don't know that the lights really come on for him yet. And I did. I honestly, I just think he's soft. And that doesn't mean he's going to stay that way. But, yeah, I just think he was soft at Florida. I do.
So here's what John Summerall gets around this guy. And if we think they're – look, they went 4-8 last year, Florida did. And that includes a 2-point loss to USF. That includes a 10-point loss at LSU where they were – I'm not saying they're going to win, but they outgained LSU and they were in the game. Like, they gave up 10 first downs at LSU and lost the game. A 4-point loss to Georgia where they were in the game. So you got those three results. They kind of got, you know, they were handled in the other ones, I would say. They were pretty well handled. But you return a 1,200-yard rusher in Jaden Ball. You return Vernell Brown, who's your top receiver. You return Dallas Wilson, who, in my opinion, DJ Lagway's numbers look way better if Wilson's playing 12 games. He only played 4 games last year. Used a red shirt because of injuries. They have a really talented cast around Philo. Like, if I'm looking at some of the other teams that we have maybe questions about quarterback, is their supporting cast better or worse than Missouri? I would say better than Missouri's. Mm-hmm. Is their supporting cast better or worse than Tennessee around a freshman? I think it's better than Tennessee's. I think their supporting cast is better around Philo than Alabama's putting around whoever its quarterback is. I mean, better than what Curtis has to work with at Vanderbilt. So all the schools, better than what Auburn's putting around Byron Brown. I think Florida has more to work with.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, there's also the matter, though, that for Philo, no one questions his talent, just like no one questioned Lagway. I mean, Lagway's very talented. There's a vastly different level of pressure, I've got to imagine, being the backup quarterback at Georgia Tech versus the starter at Florida.
That's right.
Those are very different. So you do have to consider that maybe he struggles handling that. You know, that's something we're not going to know either way until it actually happens.
And I'll tell you this, I mean, you make an excellent point there. His trajectory was to be the starting quarterback, yes, in Buster Faulkner's offense, but at Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. where you go 7-5, 8-4, make a bowl, that's considered a really good year. You do that at Florida, there's going to be some questions. Some, not mm-hmm. as many, but there's going to be some questions.
Now, there's a lot of guys, though, that, you know, moving up and, again, moving backup quarterback at Georgia Tech to moving to starter at Florida, that's moving up. I don't care who you are, that's moving up. There's a whole lot of guys who've proven that they can handle that pressure. I mean, like Trinidad Chambliss moved from Division II to Ole Miss. Handled it just fine. There's a lot of guys that have – or actually Division III, wasn't he?
Yes.
So
D2. He was D2. Ferris D2. State. Yeah, D2. Yeah.
So it's not that he can't, but it's just, you know, something to keep in mind.
I have started to, and I admit, it began when I'm reading the clips, watching the clips and reading the commentary that John Summerall gave from the podium, and I think this guy, of all the sniveling little whiners that have been in the SEC podium, like that media room this week, of all of these guys, this is the one that sounds like, so what? This is the one that sounds like, that's fine. We'll go do it.
And I do love that a coach was triggered by a cell phone in a press conference. That's not even on his campus. It just speaks to the level of accountability and how precise you have to be in everything. Does it not?
Yes.
I do. I love that. And that's not something he can turn off.
It's a classic year one move, though, right? Like, your second or third team meeting, you're like, I gotta make an example out of somebody for something, just so they know I'm serious. You know,
and every head coach is, you know, we're gonna be the most disciplined team ever, and we're gonna be the most conditioned team ever. Every head coach, every new head coach says that. My point with him is that was almost an involuntary reaction.
Yeah, you can't plan for that. You can't plan for that. I agree with you on this. Is it? You tell me. I'll let you push me back off of this just a little. If you can tell me that I'm maybe overselling, like they have a serious adult in the room as a football coach. That he obviously he's giving that vibe. Obviously, there's some recruiting going on. There's some PR going on. There's obviously some spin. And again, I think the world of Billy Napier as a person. I think Billy Napier is a better football coach than what he did at Florida. I think he made some mistakes. I do not think he did a very good job at Florida. I think he will likely do a very good job at James Madison. But this feels like a coach that understands where his predecessor fell short in these environments and is more naturally gifted in being able to rally the troops or to give off the image that this is a different age at Florida. And, you know, I think Alex Golish is doing a similar thing at Auburn. I just don't think his team is better than Florida's team. I don't think his roster is better than Florida's roster. I think Clark Lee is doing a very similar thing. I think he understands that part of his job this offseason is to let people know that he's the coach and not Diego Pavia. Because I think nationally there's this idea that, Vanderbilt's going to take a step back. Is it a little step back or a big one? And he's basically got to go out there and say, I'm in charge. Like, this is our program. I'm in charge. It ain't about the quarterback. He was great, but he ain't the coach. He's not the tone setter every day. So you have a few circumstances. Will Stein at Kentucky gets to the podium, and he does the Cignetti move. They asked him, why do you feel like you're going to win? He basically said, it's because of me. I'm the reason. He literally did the Cignetti at Kentucky now. I don't know bold. If it's a shot at Cignetti, but it's as bold at that press conference as it was at Cignetti's press conference. I'll just say that.
Back to Summerall for a moment. I know that he's inexperienced as a head coach. Only 4 seasons as a head coach. He's 43-12 in 4 seasons.
Yikes.
His worst season was 9-5 his first year at Tulane. He's gone 12-2, 11-2, 9-5, 11-3. Pretty strong.
Guy can coach, man. He can coach. You know, he can coach, and I hate to say this because I love Kalen DeBoer, but he can coach, and it feels like he can coach at that school. Like, I think the question about Kalen DeBoer is...
What's the Kalen DeBoer connection?
Can he coach there?
Yeah, okay.
You know? Like, can he coach there? And it ain't just about accents, because Nick Saban was a Midwestern guy. But, like, can you coach there? Can you do that job? And I'll admit, I thought Kalen DeBoer could do any job anywhere, and now I'm starting to have questions. I think John Summerall, he would have done a good job at Auburn. He's going to do a good job at Florida, because I think he understands how to do a good job at Florida. And I think that's important. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to join us. I have some thoughts on Shane Beamer from yesterday and something Paul Feinbaum said we need to get to after this.
With the Roar app, whenever your Clemson Tigers are playing, touchdown! The game is streaming live from anywhere in the world. Your Tigers.
Your Tigers.
Your flagship station.
Your app. Download it today.
Let me tell you about Tiger Diagnostics Lab and Dr. Ted Swan and his team. They make it easy for you to give your samples to be able to get that blood drawn. They also make it easy for your turnaround times. You know, you're talking about a 24-hour turnaround time where in the industry, you know, you're talking about days plural. Like, even if it goes good, you're talking about a couple of days to get some of those labs turned around because there's a courier involved and there's a lot of back and forth. A lot of those samples are getting sent out of state and out of region. to get processed. At Tiger Diagnostics, they can locally draw your blood, locally process it in Piedmont. That you can do it with them at one of their four locations. You can also do it through your doctor. They partner with a lot of doctors to make sure that Tiger Diagnostics is giving that efficiency to patients that need it. If you're dealing with a health situation, you need those labs done, let Tiger Diagnostics Lab be your spot. That's TigerDiagnosticsLab.com.
More local than a smoking pig boy.
Okay.
Okay.
Have a thought on Beamer. As you said, I too thought Beamer was very good yesterday. I thought he did what needed to be done. He wasn't, you know, Mike Norvell had to answer multiple questions about, like, so, like, when you get fired, like, what's that going to be? You know, and it wasn't quite like that, but that's the tenor of the questions. Everyone's kind of trying to find a way to ask Mike Norvell if he kind of has a parachute. Like, do you have a feeling like something might go down and you might be looking for work next year? Do you have any thoughts about nice places to live? Shane Beamer wasn't asked a ton of those, but he did the right stuff. The most disrespectful thing to happen to Shane Beamer yesterday is what Paul Feinbaum said to Jordan Kay from the state. This is Chapel Fowler, okay, who tweeted this. It's in the story in the state, okay? He says, quote, I think Dabo should have more pressure than Beamer, because at least Beamer's shown some signs of life lately. The only time Dabo is relevant is when he's talking about the past, and that's all he does, end quote. Now, Paul Feinbaum knows that when he name drops Dabo, the internet goes bonkers. Clemson fans will come to him like fire ants. What he's actually saying there is really disrespectful to South Carolina, okay? Think about the argument he's making. And look, this could be an offhand comment, all right? But he's making an argument that even the most serious Clemson fan wouldn't make about South Carolina, okay? In a serious moment, like in terms of argumentation. He says that Shane Beamer has, quote, shown some signs of life lately. Are any South Carolina fans picking that lane with Beamer? Because what that says about your program is this. That says that your program is showing signs of life at 4-8.
Yeah, is he saying congratulations for winning four games?
That's
kind of what he's saying, right?
That's what he's saying. And it took me aback because I'm thinking, okay, like the Clemson fans are in the comments just absolutely roasting Feinbaum, just roasting him, crushing him, whatever. I think South Carolina fans should be mad at this. Shane Beamer won 9 games 2 years ago and then won 4 games. Dabo Swinney, the only time he's relevant is when he's talking about the past, and that's all he does. Well, he went to the playoff 2 years ago, won the ACC 2 years ago. If we're going on, if we're using 2 years ago to be the things that are building right now, then you got to give Dabo some credit for that.
Also, finish this sentence for me, Kwok. Shane Beamer does not talk about the past because
there isn't one.
Yes. I just wanted you to say that, not me.
You know what he said about the past? It's better coming from me. It really is. You know what he said about the past yesterday? He basically said, even our best seasons, we start slow. Even our best seasons, we start slow, is what he said. He said, even we went 9 wins, we started 3-3.
Here is what I... One of many things about Beamer yesterday that I like, because he said this, and it's just a short little clip. He said this, but he totally means this.
Place to recruit to because we have the greatest fans in all of the world. And I know every coach in the SEC feels that way, but I am so driven to bring a championship to Columbia because of our fans.
I think he has a tremendous allegiance to his fan base. And when he says that he knows that the South Carolina fan base deserves a winning program because they do their part. And, you know, by and large, they do. I believe him when he says that. I mean, he says that passionately. I, I'm sure there's a lot of reasons that head coaches want to win. But for him, I don't think there's anything he would want more than to be able to hand some type of trophy to that fan base.
No doubt. Absolutely no doubt about it. Ben, I think that is the main argument for keeping Beamer around if he makes a bowl game. I really do. Because here's the thing. If you can go get a guy that cares as deeply as Shane Beamer does about your – not just about the job that he has, but your job, your program specifically, then you can go do that. But I don't think you can just go find him. Now, the one thing that's working against Beamer is that he hasn't made a bowl two of the last 3 years, and the AD that hired him is not his boss. So there's legitimate hot seat stuff. I mean, On3 put a list of hot seat coaches out there, and some of them I agree with, and some of them I was like, eh. The one that you have to say is on the hot seat going into the season is Beamer. Like, you have Lenora Sellers, and you have Dylan Stewart, and you have Nick Harbor, and you have the in-state guys that you've recruited, the Donovan Murph, and these guys. Like, you have defensively at all levels, you have guys that can play, Swain and Collier. And like, you have guys that can play. You need to make a bowl. What Feinbaum said, though, he acts like South Carolina fans ought to be pleased with the trajectory of their program. Now, again, if he's using Beamer as a cudgel to bash Dabo over the head because he knows it gets clicks and likes, then maybe he's doing that. Maybe he's just playing a game. But I think it's disrespectful. I think if you're a South Carolina fan, I'm not a South Carolina fan. So if you're a South Carolina fan, you want to call and disagree with me, that's fine. If I were a South Carolina fan, I would be very frustrated by the inability of Shane Beamer to consistently produce for me. I would be very frustrated about that. I would also wonder aloud, is our program set up for anybody to do what I would like for Beamer to do? And to what extent is that true? I don't think that Feinbaum is right that, you know, the trajectory's good. I don't think that's true. I don't think recruiting is going all that great for South Carolina. It's going fine, but like we're talking about a seismic shift in how they're recruiting. I don't think their portal class was great. I think they had some nice play. You know, I think what they've done in the offseason is nice. But the thing that you know about Shane Beamer is that he is going to love your job. If he misses a bowl 3 out of 4 years, you gotta lose it. You gotta do something else. But if he goes to a bowl this year, and I think South Carolina fans should want him to have success. I think they should want him to go to a bowl this year. To me, it's not the same as Mike Norvell. It's not the same as some of these other coaches. Like, to me, Ben, and feel free to disagree with this, I've never thought that Mike Norvell, like, really understood Tallahassee or, like, was really, like, joined himself to the hip with Tallahassee. I don't think that's a prerequisite to win there, but even when he's, like, having an undefeated regular season, I just don't think that Florida State fans were, like, talking about Mike Norvell like he's one of us.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know for or against that argument. It's easy to think about him in the present in a coach that's had multiple losing seasons in a row now and that's on the hottest of hot seats. I also happened to be there the night he was introduced to the Florida State fan base at a basketball game. And it's as loud as I've ever heard that arena. I mean, that's just the truth. It's as loud as I've ever heard that. And was that during COVID or right after COVID? I'm not even sure it was a full arena, but regardless.
It was also Florida State, so yeah. You know, half full arenas are true. Their thing. I think it was right before, because 2020 was his first season, right?
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I think that's right.
They loved him when he went undefeated.
They did love him then. Oh, they loved him a lot. Tens of millions of dollars worth. If I were a South Carolina fan, I think you have to have a level of appreciation for how Shane Beamer has attached himself to your program and wants you to have a positive experience.
Yeah, and we're not as close to Florida State, so maybe he has and we just are not aware of it. We know every time Shane Beamer says something, we kind of pay attention to that where we live. But, you know, maybe he has, as an outsider looking in, there does feel like a bit of disconnect in Tallahassee. I would agree with that.
And it doesn't feel, you know, South Carolina fans are frustrated with Beamer, but I feel like it's all results. Like, are people mad about how Beamer carries himself or, like, the things he said? I mean, you know what? The closest that they got was the running off the field in College Station. I think that was embarrassing. I think that was an embarrassing clip, an embarrassing moment when they post that, when he's acting like they won, and then they historically and hilariously blow that lead. The collapse there. I think that's probably the one time. I mean, listen, I can make an argument, and I don't even think I have to try hard, that the best season that he had has some controversy with it because, you know, Connor Stallions. Remember, people are trying to say that maybe they, you know, maybe they had the signs for the Tennessee game, and maybe they had some stuff on Clemson because of the games that Connor Stallions was scouting and in preparation for the playoff, that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not saying he did that. I'm just saying if you wanted to make a case that even his best season may not be that good, go nuts. I'm not going to stop you from doing that. I just think if I'm a fan of a program, I really do want my coach to understand where I'm coming from, like how I believe and not just see this as one of many jobs that he could have had. And I appreciate that from Shane Beamer. I do. Texter from the 864 says, they love Norvell because he wasn't Jimbo, in my opinion. Well, and he wasn't Willie Taggart. That was after Taggart. I think they were ready to – they might have given you a standing ovation, or me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's – it's possible. It's possible that's true. Short break. When we come back, we'll talk some more SEC. Maybe a couple more of these hot seat names. I've got some coaches I want to ask you about. Like, is the seat really hot for them? 654-ROAR is a number. We'll be back for more right after this.
Got a busy life and missed your favorite show? The best sports talk plays on your schedule.
Yeah, baby.
All shows are online on the podcast page and ready to play when you want.
This is awesome.
Download the Roar app or visit theroarfm.com.
Let me tell you about Dolly's Roofing, the Dolly's difference, okay? You got to love it. You got to love it. Quest from Clemson says, top three baseball movie of all time. Really good film.
It's a, you know, it's one of those that you know is not good, but you watch it anyway because it's entertaining.
It's just what it is. If we're being honest, that's most of the baseball movies. Like, most of the baseball movies we love are nostalgia, and it's not because they were, you know, like a lot of the baseball movies, I shouldn't say this, a lot of the baseball movies, in terms of just movie enjoyment, are very overrated.
I don't even really classify that as a baseball movie. Like, that's disrespectful to Field of Dreams.
Right.
And
Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah, that's kind of disrespectful to that.
Oh, yeah, League of Their Own. All good movies, but, like, not The Dark Knight or something. No. The Godfather. People were asking, Shane Beamer's buyout, $22.1 million after this season.
Yeah, he would be owed 65% of his remaining guaranteed money.
What does he have to – do you agree that he goes to a bowl, he's probably fine?
Yeah.
I think so.
I think he's also in a situation where – and earmuffs Clemson fans, but – maybe not going to a bowl, but being close and one of those wins being in, being Clemson, maybe that helps him. He won here 2 years ago in the ugliest game I've been to in a long, long time, 17-14.
Brutal.
So you certainly hope that doesn't happen, but, you know, there's also, man, the South Carolina schedule.
How many games are going to be favored?
1, 2, 3, 4, 4.5, maybe. I don't know if they'll be favored at Arkansas or not. Kent State, Towson, Mississippi State. Those first three are all in Columbia. You're going to certainly be favored in those.
Yes.
Kentucky, I think you're probably favored in that one. That's another home one. You took care of Kentucky last year. And I'm not saying these are games they're going to win, because, listen, at Alabama's in the middle of that stretch. South Carolina is not scared of Alabama the way that they've shown up the last 2 years.
They should have beat them there 2 years ago.
Yeah. And then at Arkansas, you know, at Arkansas, are they going to be favored there by November 14th? Who knows?
But I think Arkansas stinks. I think I can see a path for a lot of these teams and programs. I think Arkansas stinks.
Down the stretch, though, Tennessee at Oklahoma, Texas A&M at Arkansas, Georgia, and at Clemson. Yeesh.
That's difficult. That's very difficult. I could get you to five. I get you to five wins. And listen, you were talking about at Alabama not being certain. I could say the same thing about home against Kentucky with Will Stein. I think that's a program that we actually don't know anything. They have totally new players and a system that obviously they are very confident in. There's a lot of self-confidence there in Kentucky.
What I do know is that a four-win team, one of those wins was against Kentucky last year, 35-13. It was the most dominant game, actually, that South Carolina played all season long.
Honestly, very similar to Florida State.
I don't count Coastal Carolina at the end.
That Florida State-Wake Forest game where Florida State won by 35, and you're like, wait, what happened here?
Right.
That was kind of the Kentucky game where you're like, whoa, 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 time out. What the heck is this?
Our text line's hung up on baseball movies.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Yep.
I do have to acknowledge the Sandlot. We got a lot of those texts all of a sudden, and I appreciate that. We were not ranking movies. We were just mentioning a few that came to the top of our mind. I think the Sandlot is a phenomenal movie. As I've said many times, my oldest son watched it no less than 272 times as a child, which means I also watched it that many. I love movies like that. I love narrated movies by one of the characters. I'm a sucker for those kid movies, Stand By Me and I don't know why. I just love those movies.
That's an excellent, like, late 80s, early 90s fixture is the narrator-driven movies. Like, the Goldbergs does this on TV where, like, they're doing the 80s, and because there's, like, a narrator that's you know, leading the action, I think it's Patton Oswalt that narrates the thing, it feels very 80s. And The Sandlot has a little bit of an 80s. It just feels like
listen,
it.
I'm going to make a statement here, and I'm not looking for feedback. I'm just going to say something that's factual, and don't at me. The scene with the kid and Wendy Peppercorn, the lifeguard, in which he pretends to drown, is perhaps one of the greatest scenes of all time.
It's really good.
I said what I said, people.
It's really good. It's
really, oh, God, I love that scene.
Oh, it's really
if
good.
That's on TV and I know that scene's coming up, I pause every time and watch that. I will stop what I'm doing.
There are some wonderful clips of that. Like, you could clip watch that movie to death. You could find all the good ones and just absolutely hammer them. It's unbelievable. Texter says this. Back to South Carolina. Stop telling me how good Sellers is if he can't win seven games. All right, timeout. If South Carolina goes 5-7, well, you know what? I don't even have to do hypothetical. I can look at last year. Anybody blaming Sellers for last year? What did Sellers do? 13 touchdowns, 8 picks. Not great, Bob. 61%, not great, Bob. 270 net yards, took a million sacks. Not great, Bob. Anybody? Like, where does Lenore Sellers rank in terms of the reasons that South Carolina went 4-8? Because I would put him below play caller, offensive line, skill. Literally, I would put him almost at the bottom. He's like the least reason that they went 4-8. I don't think he's without blame. But I don't think if they win 7, it's going to be because Sellers plays like markedly better. I think it's going to take better offensive line play, a play caller that knows what the heck he's doing. Jury's still out on that one. And better skill. Guys who don't drop the ball. Guys who can run more than one route. You're going to need a lot of that. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe I'm letting Sellers off the hook, Ben. I've seen him put on the cape too many times. But to me, I wasn't worried about Sellers last year playing poorly and costing South Carolina games.
Of all the things to worry about from last year, I would agree he did not have his best season. He also ran for his life the whole year, had one guy to throw to, and they became a one-trick pony there. Just ask yourself this. Would you take him on your team?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're a Clemson fan and you would take Christopher Vezina over Lenore Sellers, then I would submit to you that your heart is leading your head at this point. Because there's no way. Sellers, this is interesting. I was looking at this. Actually, Mickey had me peruse this because he was talking about Alabama and how few guys on Phil Steele's team. Do you know Phil Steele has 4 all-conference teams that he does? Mm-hmm. Offense, defense, special teams. Do you know Lenore Sellers is not one of the top 4 quarterbacks in the SEC to him? In fact, if you look at quarterback rooms, he has South Carolina tied for 7th. Here are the teams / players he has over Sellers. He has Arch Manning.
Okay.
He has Trinidad Chambliss.
Okay.
He has Gunnar Stockton. He has Marcel Reed. He has John Mateer.
Okay. When the top 3, I would agree with that, and no qualms whatsoever. Those 3 I would take over Lenore Sellers. Would you agree?
Yes.
Most people would.
I think I would. Because I watched Sellers, and right. Sellers wasn't great last year. Yeah.
When you get into the Reed-Mateer conversation, I think that's where Lenore Sellers falls. I think that's where the argument is, and a valid argument. And I guess he's leaning in those other teams, but those are also better programs right now. Texas A&M, a lot better talent around Reed. Oklahoma, a lot better talent around Mateer, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, but in terms of would you take this guy versus that guy, for me anyway, that's where Lenore Sellers lands in that conversation.
I just think when I watch them play, okay, and I listen, you could do stats all day, and in fact, I could argue for Sellers against all those guys. Lenore Sellers is a better quarterback than Marcel Reed. He just is a better quarterback than Marcel Reed. How many games has Marcel Reed taken over in his career? Is Marcel?
Well, one.
I mean.
And unfortunately.
1 second half. Ben.
There was that one.
Man.
And unfortunately, the other quarterback in the game was named Lenore Sellers.
But, like, South Carolina's game plan there was, like, run the ball up the center's butt crack and punt. Like, that's what they did the whole second half. They didn't even give Sellers a chance to win the game.
Well, they also celebrated at halftime and, you know, did their post-game press conference during the third quarter.
Remarkable.
I was in an airport coming back from a game watching that. Oh, man, gosh. What a game.
It was great. It was great. For all but the Gamecock fans, it was great. But, like, John Mateer? Like, if I'm just going – Lenore Sellers isn't hurt half the – like, John – I keep saying, Oklahoma, you can bet on Oklahoma's defense and you can bet on John Mateer if he doesn't break in half. And there's nothing about John Mateer that makes me think he's starting 12 games 100% or relatively close 100%. If he starts 12 games, he's going to start with a cast on 3 of the games. He's just – he's a reckless player. He's like an outfielder that can't stop running into the wall.
South Carolina fans, I'd love to hear from you. Where would you put Lenore Sellers in that list? Because we hear from a lot of Clemson fans who want to bash him, but what does South Carolina fans think about their guy? You know, and then you got to factor in guys like Philo. Sam Levitt's in the league now, by the way, folks. You know, there's some of that. You got to – I think he's in that – I think I got him in that right category.
I think you're right. Like Byron Brown, he has Levitt – Phil Steele has Levitt behind him, actually, which I think Sam Levitt Honestly, I would compare Sam Levitt and Lenore Sellers directly in terms of 20. They made their name in 24. 25, below standard. For Levitt, it was injuries and maybe poor performances. With Sellers, it was he did not play as well. So maybe Sam Levitt is a direct comparison there. I'm still saying if you put Lenore Sellers with Texas A&M and that offensive structure, I'm telling you that's a winning player. That guy's winning a playoff game. Like if you put Lenore Sellers on Texas A&M in a playoff game against Miami at home, I think they win the game. Maybe I'm wrong. A little biased. South Carolina has a top five or six quarterback situation in the league, in my opinion. I would love to hear from some South Carolina fans on this. When we come back, Will Vandervoort, he's very biased, so we might ask him this question as well. He did some good reporting this week, though, too, on the political realm. We'll talk about that in the final hour of the show after this.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. WAHD-AM 1560. Cowpens.